the traditional workforce development ecosystem who have some understanding of energy, preferably. And I thank you very much for the opportunity, and I apologize again for my panting.
Thank you, and apologies we made you run. The next person we have on our list is Seth Wiley. Can we have Seth, please?
Hey, how you doing? Thanks very much. Yes, Seth Wiley, I'm an Orangetown, New York resident. I have a couple of comments here representing myself, but I'd like to encourage the panel to consider increasing funding, or actually creating funding from the CLCPA for New York State land banks. It would basically pick up the tapering funding that comes from the New York State Attorney General's office. The land banks have done a good job, a demonstrable good job in 2008 recovery. So it's probably good to fund them going forward, given the COVID economic conditions. I'd also like to encourage a review of the, the current legislation that's in legislative session. It feathers with CLCPA legislation. That is A08617. It's also the Senate 08965. It's the Low Embodied Carbon Concrete Act that's currently in session. I'd echo some other comments that were made on LMI housing and the stretch code. And that's it.
Thank you, Seth. The next person we have on deck is Sarah Schultz. Welcome, Sarah.
Thank you, thank you. And thank you so much for the work you've been doing. I went last night and looked over your presentation from your last meeting and your notes, and I'm just so humbled by the work you're doing. I'm going to actually send in my comments representing Sierra Club because they're extensive and it's just, there's so many things that they're suggesting and asking, although they're incorporated into a lot of things you're already talking about. As far as just like highlighting things like, and I'm not sure, I might be wrong, I didn't hear you say this in the beginning of the meeting, that polluters should be paying, for their carbon output and considering the cost of resilience and resiliency planning and weather event disasters, and that this carbon piece should fund just transition. I just want to echo like education on this. I've been living in a house with geothermal since the beginning of 2013. And I mean, admittedly, I didn't know much about it before that, but people really don't know about it. The other thing that was really a drag was that the New York State, there was no subsidy for it. So, it was really heavy, a long time paying a loan. So I would definitely fair play for heat pumps is the way to go. I did notice on the survey that you didn't have labor unions respond. And I was just curious about that because in my volunteer advocacy for renewable like solar and wind energy, it's just labor unions are key to getting things to happen with renewable energy. So that was a question that I had, why do you think that they didn't respond to your survey? Hard dates, like people said, and also, regarding labor workforce, very strong workforce development with good jobs. So thank you so much for this, and I will send in my comments.
Thank you so much. The next person we have is Bob Wyman.
Good afternoon from New York City's Upper West Side. Pleasure to be with you. I'd like to, first off, just back up and agree with the comments many have made that it is desperately important that we have dates. Without dates, it's very difficult for anybody to rationally plan how they're going to go about actually meeting the requirements and the other recommendations. Dates are absolutely necessary. I'm pleased to see that you've got removal of the 100-foot rule in your list, but I'd like to point out that there are other parts of state law that currently make it difficult to move forward on replacing fossil fuel with electric systems, beneficial electrification. And one of them is that it states in state law that, in fact, providing gas heat to all citizens of New York is, in fact, in the public interest. And I think it's time that we take that out of the law and replace it by a more general statement that perhaps providing heating and cooling to New York residents is in the public interest, or providing thermal energy services is in the public interest. But no longer is it the case that providing gas is in the public interest. In the financing section, it's great to see you're looking at loans and things. It's important to note that even though loans would be good for many people don't have enough credit to access them, and they don't have enough money to spend the capital that will be necessary to adopt these new technologies. Thus, I'd like to suggest that you look very hard at considering third-party ownership schemes, either for individuals or third-party ownership in the form of district heating systems, so that particularly low and moderate income people can get access to enough capital to actually adopt these technologies. It's also important to note that electric rates at the moment, because they're volumetric and they're set up with the assumption that homes are heated with fossil fuels, tend to produce a reverse cost shift onto those who do adopt, particularly geothermal heat pumps, so that for an example, here in New York City, NYSERDA estimates that if you have a geothermal heat pump, you're going to be paying more than $836 a year, more than your fair share for the costs of the electric system.
Thank you,
and
Bob.
We have to have rates that get rid of that.
I'm going to cut you off there. I'm sorry. You must have just finished, but I'm just trying to be equitable to everyone. Thank you so much. You can finish your thoughts in the written comments. The next person we have is Philip Brown. Oh, Philip, I see you, but I don't hear you. So
you hear me? Sorry.
Yes. Okay. Now we do.
Okay. Very good. This is a tremendous undertaking that you guys are taking. I commend all of you for all of the hard work that everyone has put in thus far. I found out about this from a member of Long Island Progressive Coalition, and they've come down. I live on the Shinnecock Indian Reservation. I'm the housing director for our tribe, and I'm working on a number of energy efficiency programs and solar installations. And what I'm finding is that a lot of our community members don't know a lot about what's going on with the lowering of the carbon emissions, the what's even happening in the industry as far as renewable energy. And so the biggest one of the biggest comments I can say is that you're going to have to do a tremendous amount of outreach to the public to let them know that this big transformation is taking place. Because without their buy-in, without them being able to have the resources to actually help out in this great endeavor, it's not going to get done. So we need to really focus on education and getting the resources, especially to low affordable incomes, where all they're thinking about is how do I put food on the table and not what, my heating system. I just want to go to my heating system, click it on, and it works. They're not going to be worried about the energy efficiency of it. So I really think education and getting that out to people is a big, big part that needs to take place. So thank you, Philip.
All right. Appreciate that.
Yeah.
All right. That is the end of our block. And so now I'm going to invite colleagues at the New York State team to just provide any reactions while we prepare the next block.
Yeah, sure. So we heard a lot in that block about the need for outreach and education, the importance of that, that resiliency is also important when we're talking about this transition and ensuring an affordable transition. There were some more comments emphasizing the need for a date certain for the transition, as well as support for the CCIA legislation and low embodied carbon legislation is what I heard.
Thanks so much, Kelly. Great. All right, Isela, you can take it on to the next block.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
So again, as always, I'll read the list as a full set, and then we'll go name by name. So I have, and apologies beforehand if I mispronounce anyone's name, bear with us here. Davida Alexander with Oxford Consulting, followed by Mark Dunlea with Green Education and Legal Fund, followed by Dick Kornbluth with Heat Smart CUNY Building Performance Institute. Then we're going to go with Salisa Therian, who is on the call and has requested to speak. Christina Starr, also with the Environmental Investigation Agency. And then Pete Sikora with New York City Communities for Change. So, Davida, I'm going to pass it on to you. Davida Alexander, okay. Are you able to unmute yourself?
Sorry, it took me a while to figure out how to unmute. And I apologize. I actually didn't realize that I had signed up to speak. I thought I signed up to attend only. But thank you for the opportunity.
Exactly.
I am a affordable housing attorney and consultant, and we've been having a lot of conversation recently. Meaning projects that are under development, about the Climate Act and, you know, how to best support it affordably. So I echo the two comments that came before me, or the two categories of comments that came before me, in terms of education and awareness being critical. Because as we ask these questions amongst ourselves, finding the answers isn't all that easy at this point. And then the second piece being affordability. So affordability when it comes to the equipment and, you know, the capital costs, but then also as the one gentleman from the Upper West Side remarked about the cost of just running an all-electric household. Education in that area and understanding how that can be done affordably would be a big help.
Great. Thank you so much, Davida. And thank you for staying within your 2 minutes. We're going to move on to Mark Dunlea with the Green Education and Legal Fund. And you are on mute. If you can just unmute yourself so that we can all hear you. Still on mute.
Take your own.
All right.
Okay. Unmuted myself a second time. I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak. I will say I'm actually sitting right now under an air heat pump, and I actually had to turn it off because it was getting too hot in here with the sun being outside. So they do tend to work even in cold weather. Like a lot of the speakers have said, I'm actually very pleased by a number of the recommendations that you've made, particularly the idea about getting, trying to end natural gas hookups and moving towards things like air heat pump for heating. But however, of course, the dates are critical to see and the details. I do hope the state will increase the economic incentives to install air heat pumps. I do recommend the state, you know, look at implementing some of the building codes that California has adopted, such as, you know, all new homes being carbon neutral by 2020, and also all new homes under three stories, including solar. I think the state has to be more aggressive in requiring local governments, when you do building codes like Strive or Stretch, I'm sorry, that they actually implement that. I do want to support the idea that we have to do a carbon tax, not only to make renewable energy more affordable, but also raise revenue to deal with some of this stuff. I was particularly concerned about the idea of cross panel discussion about bioenergy, which many of us have significant problems with, and hope you don't consider it.
Great. Thank you so much for your promptness there. We're going to move on to Dick Kornbluth.
start my video. There we go. Thank you. Can you see or hear me? Because
Go right ahead.
I didn't sign up before, so I'm a little surprised that my name got called, but there are several issues that I'm concerned about in terms of scale. So there are basically three ways to drive adoption of heat pumps. One is by code, and I'm really happy to see that that is one sort of area of process. The other is through incentives, through programs, and my city is trying mightily to try to get adoption of heat pumps into the marketplace. And the third way that happens is through demand. And the problem with demand, which is the private marketplace, is that demand has to be driven by people who see the inherent benefits of the product, and also that there is a contractor supply who also sees that it is good business for them to do so because there's an inherent demand in the marketplace. And I don't see where the marketing piece, which I think is totally critical for the transformation of the marketplace to reach the goals that are required to meet these goals, are exactly in place. And HVAC contractors are generally conservative, but don't like to adopt new technologies when the old ones are working. And so in order for the contractors to be willing to get into the industry of heat pumps, it's either going to be driven by code where they're required because the public is asking for it. And I think the third piece is really critical, and I don't see where that is factoring into the expenditure. Thank you.
Thank you so much. We are going to move on to our next speaker here. I have Salisa Berrien. Go right ahead. So Lisa, can you hear me? Are you able to unmute yourself?
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Okay.
Stop. And then Mark, if you can please mute yourself. Apologies, so Lisa, I just want to make sure if somebody on our tech can mute other folks, just so we can eliminate background noise.
Yes, sure. Okay. So thank you for the opportunity to just quickly share. My background, Salisa Berrien, founder and CEO of COI Energy. I grew up in a marginalized community, so I experienced energy poverty. And so this subject matter is really important to me. I've worked my career in the energy field for over 25 years. And what I recognize is there's a whole lot of waste that's happening on the business side. So if we look at the energy waste just from buildings alone, business buildings, in 2017, it was like $55 billion of the energy they consumed was wasted. And that was over 300 million metric tons of carbon. If we focus on a way to address energy inefficiency, and I believe NYCHA and their climate mitigation study, they mentioned something like that. And then earlier, Philip was talking about energy efficiency. If we focus some of our efforts on there and the electrification, I believe that we can really try to repurpose energy waste to help support these marginalized communities that I'm a recipient of, growing up in those communities, and recognizing that we can make the whole ecosystem better if we all stakeholders play a part in helping those communities that are most negatively impacted by climate change. And so through energy efficiency, I think we can help turn us around to be able to gift clean energy solutions to these communities. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your comments. I'm gonna move us along to Christina Starr. If you can unmute yourself.
Hi, yes, thank you. This is Christina Starr. I'm a senior policy analyst at the Environmental Investigation Agency. We're a nonprofit environmental organization that's been working for decades worldwide to address the climate impacts of fluorinated refrigerants used in cooling systems and heat pumps. And my comment today is in regard to a gap in the scope of this panel's current policy recommendations when it comes to addressing these super pollutant hydrofluorocarbons, or HFC, refrigerants used in cooling systems and heat pumps. And HFCs account for a growing portion of New York's non-CO2 greenhouse gas emissions, with good reason to expect that this will continue absent state-level action. So the policies under discussion right now will contribute to increased use and emissions of HFCs in heat pumps, but fail to ensure that the state is addressing either the types of refrigerants used in those equipment or reducing the leaks and end-of-life venting of these gases. So it's important to take action now before increasing the installed base of heat pumps and other equipment using these substances and locking in emissions for many years to come. And we have four very specific policy recommendations related to HFC refrigerants for consideration by the panel. First is directing the New York State Building Code Council to prioritize adoption of updated safety standards and building codes for refrigeration and air conditioning equipment to allow the uptake of lower global warming potential refrigerants. Second is adopt GWP threshold limits for refrigerants in new stationary air conditioning and refrigeration equipment consistent with those adopted in California and some other states. Three is incorporate the climate impacts of the refrigerant and the amounts of refrigerant used into the efficiency incentive and rebate programs for cooling and heat pump equipment so that these programs also incentivize adoption of the most climate friendly equipment from a refrigerant perspective.
I apologize, Christina. I'm going to cut you off just as you've gone over your 2 minutes.
And no problem. I will submit. No problem. I'll submit them in written. Thank you so much.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for your patience there. Okay. I'm going to go on to Peter Sikora with the NYC Communities for Change. If you can hear me, go ahead, unmute yourself and begin.
Hey, thanks. It's Pete Sikora here with NYCC. I got a couple kids in the background, so I'll talk fast, but I might jump. New York City is way the heck ahead of New York State, and New York State needs to move much, much faster than these recommendations imply. In addition, it needs to spend vastly more money so that low and middle income people do not face higher costs that they cannot easily afford. So our two main recommendations here, looking at it real quick, are number one, push up the dates. Some of this stuff should start almost immediately. That is in 2022. Number two, need to spend billions of dollars per year in new state spending raised progressively to fund everything from upgrading public, social, and supportive housing to one and two family homes for low income and low moderate income homeowners. New York City can't mobilize the money that's needed because the state prohibits it from raising revenue effectively. So the state really has to step up here, and that means raising money progressively. We favor taxing the rich. All that money should be tied to high road labor standards that maximize good union jobs, hiring from low income and communities of color. So these should be career track jobs. We'll submit more comments in writing. But finally, I'd like to say that the governor is missing in action here. In fact, right now he's coming to defang New York's law, which is sad because it's the best and first law in the country, but the governor's proposing to override and weaken it. So I hope you recommend much stronger stuff and much, much more money, and that the governor adopts that. Thank you very much. We'll submit in writing as well.
Oh, thank you for that, Pete. I had just sent you a message that you have 30 seconds. I am going to pass it on to Vanessa to do some reflection.
Yes, thank you, Isabella. So I definitely heard the urgency from this group of respondents. Thank you. We hear that the call to think about accelerating dates and acting with urgency. Also, the continued underscoring of education, 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 and marketing, making sure that our consumers in New York State, as well as our contractor base, see these solutions as attractive and are ready to drive to scale. We heard that codes can make a difference and appreciate you all providing some examples, including examples in California, stretch codes, the good work in New York City, and specific industry standards such as passive house. We heard that in addition to building electrification, energy efficiency and reducing energy waste is really critical, and that there's also an important need to consider the impact of refrigerants and HFCs as we do look towards increasing numbers of heat pumps in our state. And then finally, continued emphasis on affordability, recognizing that having adequate program and incentive funding is important with respect to upfront costs, and then the opportunity here to work to support disadvantaged communities, as well as living wage job opportunities. Thank you all.
Thank you, Vanessa. All right, folks, we're going to move on to the next block. In this block, we're going to hear from Chris Jensen, New York State Building Officials, Rocco Lacertosa, New York State Energy Coalition, Floyd Vergara, National Biodiesel Board, Michelle Rogat, Capital District Community Energy District, Michaela Ciovacco, New Yorkers for Clean Power, and Tara Vamos, New Yorkers for Cool Refrigerant Management. Again, apologies if I mispronounced your name. And we will start with Chris Jensen. Chris, if you can unmute and start speaking, that would be great. Yep. Thank you.
Let me introduce myself. My name is Chris Jensen. I'm a code enforcement officer, licensed professional engineer, ICC master code professional, and president of the New York State Building Officials. The New York State Building Officials is a state-level organization which represents over 19 regional chapters and the associated thousands of building officials throughout the state. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. As an organization, we understand the need and support plans for the reduction of greenhouse gas emissions. We do not believe it's feasible to modify the current energy code and place the burden of review and enforcement on the code enforcement community. We don't have the resources necessary to enforce more restrictive standards. Code enforcement officers are certified at the state level, but are local municipal employees. We're required to enforce the uniform code and energy code, but we also answer to the community and local officials. Our local municipalities and developers cannot withstand the financial impacts of increased mandates. The cost of building new homes has increased exponentially in the past decade, and the most recent modifications to the energy codes have placed burdens on the builders. Adding more will only drive people away from building and living in New York State. We spend a great deal of time and effort defending the role of code enforcement. We are essential in providing safe and healthy living and working conditions for the members of our communities. We justify our duties by detailing how the codes make for higher property values, enhance the quality of life, and work to keep aging buildings and properties from becoming a blight on our communities. If we begin enforcing codes which hurt our local economy and reduce new development, we'll alienate our communities and become just another undesired mandate by New York State. In response to anyone who violates these proposed codes, local courts will not and do not hear cases and fine residents for energy code violation. Municipalities often spend thousands of dollars to pursue life safety violations and property maintenance violations, only to have local courts fine the owner maybe $250 or not at all. Municipalities will not support code enforcement utilizing funds to pursue energy code violations. The most practical means of meeting higher energy efficient standards is to offer incentives to move away from fossil fuels, to move towards electrification, to move towards more efficient methods of heating and cooling. Thank you.
Sorry, you can continue that in the official comments, written comments. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I am now going to turn it over to Rocco Lacertosa.
Okay, good afternoon. My name is Rocco Lacertosa. I'm the CEO of the New York State Energy Coalition. We represent the interests of the home heating fuel industry in the five boroughs of New York City and Nassau and Suffolk counties on Long Island. I'd like to provide a brief introduction to what our industry has been doing to improve the heating fuel we deliver to homes across our region. Since 2000, the state's heating oil industry has had a history of conserving energy and improving its fuel. The industry has reduced home heating oil consumption by 40% through appliance efficiencies and the use of cleaner burning fuel, reduced particulate matter in heating oil by proposing a reduction in sulfur content of diesel fuel to 15 parts per million, proposed a 5% blending biodiesel blending law for space heating in New York metropolitan area, and supported amendments for New York City to ramp up its biodiesel use to 20% by 2034. Biodiesel is a drop-in gallon-for-gallon replacement for conventional heating oil. It works in customers' current heating systems without the need for a new appliance. It increases efficiency and burns some 78% cleaner than heating oil. And equally important, it does not increase cost to consumers, and this fact is supported by data from NYSERDA. It's a seamless transition for consumers. The industry supports expanding biodiesel blending levels throughout the state to 20% by 2030. This action will contribute to the state's carbon reduction goals, while at the same time immediately phasing out the use of 200 million gallons of conventional heating oil in the state. Finally, we urge the advisory panel to consider biodiesel blending of heating oil in its recommendations to the Climate Action Council. Thank you. And we will be submitting more extensive written comments. And thank you for the opportunity today.
Thank you, Rocco. Appreciate that. I am going to now turn it over to Floyd Vergara.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I hear you.
Good afternoon. I'm Floyd Vergara, Director of State Governmental Affairs at the National Biodiesel Board. NBB has been a longtime supporter of the all of the above decarbonization strategies in transportation, heating, and other sectors. As Rocco noted, there are significant environmental benefits from using drop-in sustainable biodiesel, but I want to add a bit more color to that. For some context, prior to recently joining NBB, I was program director and 32-year veteran at the California Air Resources Board, where I oversaw development of major regulations to address climate change and reduce smog forming and toxic air pollutants. I also led CARB's work with the Environmental Justice Advisory Committee for a number of years. From a climate air quality and EJ perspective, cleaner fuels like biodiesel are particularly effective as transitional near zero carbon strategies that can provide much needed human health protections from day one during the years it will take for states to ramp up their electrification efforts. Last year, NBB commissioned a multi-state study to quantify biodiesel's health benefits using US EPA and CARB approved air dispersion modeling and health risk assessments to quantify reductions in cancer risk, cancer burden, premature deaths, asthma attacks, and loss of reduced activity and work days. Sites in each of the states that were evaluated were selected due to their high diesel fuel use and their proximity to EJ communities and other highly impacted residents. The health risk assessments that were done at census tract resolution to determine impacts at the community level. So just real briefly, the preliminary results, which we hope to finalize by the end of this month, indicate potential for significant reductions in the health impacts that I mentioned earlier. For New York, we looked at the Sotomayor housing development in the Bronx and the city of Albany. Doing our heating oil analysis, that analysis is under review by the American Lung Association, and it shows that biodiesel can reduce human health impacts by 85%, translating to cancer burden around Sotomayor by 10, avoiding.
Okay, thank you, Floyd.
All right.
Just when you got to the numbers, but please do put them in the final comments.
We will put them in the comments. Thank you very much for your time.
Great. Thank you. I'm now going to turn it over to Michelle Rogat. Again, apologies if I mispronounced that.
No worries. Hi, I'm Michelle Rogan. I am live up in the Capital Region, and I am here with a background in regional planning, renewable energy, sustainability, and affordable housing. I'm going to make real quick comments as I'll be submitting a lot more in writing, but I want to address just this cross-cutting ideas among state agencies and programs. There are a lot of things missing here. Specifically, there is a large barrier for the LMI community to provide income documentation, and it seems that there are different requirements across programs and agencies. I would really recommend, once someone files their taxes, they can get an income verification letter by the state so that they can then apply for all of these programs, and it's a very easy application. Second, something missing here seems to be the role at the local government level where this work will get implemented. Energy literacy is really needed. Education and outreach, not just among the public, but among the local government. And I suggest a regional planning effort in order to do that. A regional planning effort on energy, but that can also carry out education for energy and the effects of housing. Also, lastly, I wanted to say that I would like to suggest reimagining roles at the local government level for the local code enforcement, but also the fire department. I believe that if provided enough resources to carry it out, that they
could. Floyd, you are not. I apologize for the interruption. Floyd, you are not on mute. If you could just mute yourself.
My apologies.
But I want to say that right now we are sort of reimagining our roles at the local level, and separately the police force, but separate from that, we have an opportunity here to reimagine the local government role in energy and housing. The code enforcement, I agree, they need more resources to do this, but when they carry out inspections, there's an opportunity to also carry out energy audits and then provide resources to the community so that instead of getting penalized for code, they could be provided resources for energy efficiency to actually reach code as well. And there's an opportunity here to
thank you, Michelle.
Thank you
so much. Appreciate that. I'm going to now turn it over to Michaela. Michaela Siovacco. Yes.
Hi there. Michaela Siovacco with New Yorkers for Clean Power. Thanks for having putting this all together. Our campaign works with other groups across the state to decarbonize buildings in order to make that bigger shift to for the state to run on clean energy. And it's made clear to me through our work that we need to prioritize equitable mandates that maintain affordability and protect tenants while achieving our decarbonization goals. And this could come in the form of supporting electrification pilots and affordable multifamily housing that builds community support and a demand for electrification and natural gas transition policies. I want to emphasize some of the points that were made earlier on setting hard deadlines to phase out fossil fuels. I think that will be critical, as well as some of the comments about developing our clean energy workforce. We should provide funding for on-the-job training and other career pathway services to support the expansion of skilled and trained workforce and efficiency and electrification. Energy efficiency jobs make up the majority of clean energy jobs in New York, but we need clearer pathways and support for this. It's also critical that we have more equitable funding and financing mechanisms to address the upfront and operational costs of building electrification and efficiency. Implementing new funding mechanisms like incentives and low-cost financing dedicated to affordable housing, efficiency, and electrification it would be good, and a greater amount of that funding and the distribution of that funds in order to support comprehensive retrofits, electrifying heating, hot water, and cooking. It would be, we should also have states and municipal agencies require that all new and retrofit building projects meet the highest energy efficiency standards and transition to electrification. The New York Green Bank should have an investment plan that aligns with the CLCPA goals, and our benefit cost analysis for different systems should include the costs related to health, since fossil fuel-based systems have huge. Okay, great. Thanks.
Thanks so much. All right. And the last person in this block is Tara Ramos.
Hi there. I'm going to echo a lot of what Christina Starr said. My name is Tara Vamos. I am a member of a group called New Yorkers for Cool Refrigerant Management. We're a all-volunteer group. A lot of us are involved in our town's climate smart committees and in other ways. We became interested in refrigerants. Refrigerants by New York State's most recent greenhouse gas inventory are considered to be 5% of New York's emissions, but they're short-lived climate pollutants. If you use 20-year GWPs, they're going to be a much larger percentage. And we have been monitoring the various advisory groups that are supposed to be consulting with the CAC. And almost no, if they're just sliding between the cracks. So don't think that another advisory panel is looking at refrigerants. We are calling on the buildings and efficiency and housing panel to look at refrigerants, and we're also putting out that call to the waste panel. Things that would make a huge difference are to speed the approval of A2L and A3 refrigerants for use in heat pumps. Right now, the mini split heat pumps that we're looking at installing all across the state use R410A, which has a 20-year GWP of 4,340. They're designed to leak minimally, but there's little data on how much they actually leak in real-life installations. A2L and A3 refrigerants have much lower GWPs and have been used safely for many years in Japan and Europe, and we should update our codes so that we are using lower GWP equipment, especially because we're going to have this push to put in heat pumps. In supermarket chillers and large refrigeration systems and HVAC systems in large buildings, we should be lowering acceptable leak rates. This can be implemented by closely monitoring both electricity usage and by monitoring directly for refrigerant leaks. And resulting systems that both leak less refrigerant are also more energy efficient. New York State should adopt the low GWP limits on new equipment that California has set.
Thank you, Tara. I'm sorry you
ran out of time. That's okay. I'll send the comments. Thanks. Okay.
Thank you. All right. I'm going to turn it over to Estella.
Thank you. So here we go. As always, I will read all the list and then we'll go one by one. So first up, I have James Parks from Stark Technology Group, followed by Tom Sagayan, followed by Lindsay Spear with Alliance for a Green Economy, who will then be followed by Fanyu Lin with Fluxus, followed by Brian Cragen with Hub Controls USA Inc. And then the last on this block will be Lisa Harrison. So James Parks, go right ahead. And again, you have 2 minutes.
Thanks for the opportunity here. My name is James Parks, and I am a boiler salesman. Despite the fact that I make my living selling gas-fired equipment, I wanted to make clear that I'm a strong supporter of building electrification. I wanted to offer comments to the state based on my experience in the field, which reflects some of the comments that were made very early in this portion of the section, which was that most people don't think about their heating system until it breaks, and at that point there are emergency replacement considerations. I believe that the state should be looking at ways to incentivize emergency replacements in a much earlier period than the implementation of, or the implementation away from natural gas. When you install a new boiler or a furnace or anything that is gas fired, it's a 15 to 30 year piece of equipment. So you're immediately losing 15 to 20 years of an electrified piece of equipment. So I wanted to offer that incentives for homeowners, businesses, etc., those going through emergency replacements to immediately install electrified equipment. There should be incentives looked at the electrical infrastructure that is required to transition. These types of equipment require high electrical loads, and there is a cost associated with making your building capable to handle that load. In addition, from my perspective in the business, is incentivizing heating and cooling companies to stock and carry these types of equipment to handle emergency replacements. When you have gas-fired equipment on hand but not electric equipment, and someone needs heat tomorrow, you install the gas-fired equipment. So incentivizing businesses to be prepared for emergencies with electrical equipment would be a positive place to start, I believe. So those are my comments. I appreciate the opportunity to speak. Great. And I'm thankful that this is moving forward. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your time and for your comments. I'm going to move us along to Tom Sahagian. And I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing your name.
Yeah, it won't be the first time, so that's okay. Hi, everyone. Tom Sahagian here. Now that I've had a chance to see some of the proposals from the committee, I want to take the time to make a much more nuanced, a much more nuanced and complex response to send to the committee. But in the meantime, I'd like to mention that right now I'm overseeing a conversion of a 10-unit building in Manhattan from oil-fired one-pipe steam to individual air source heat pumps in each apartment. And in about a year, we'll have the data on that, which I'll be happy to share with you. The items that I support from what I can see of the proposals from the committee include the immediate ban on fossil fuel heating and hot water in new construction, creation of the business conditions that will accelerate electrification of existing buildings, fair utility rates for electrified heating and domestic hot water, an immediate push to train and certify HVAC technicians, I also want to mention that oil and gas, you know, we shouldn't just focus on gas. I think oil needs to be looked at as well. And the previous speaker alluded basically to the idea of stranded assets. If you put in a new boiler and it lasts for 30 or 40 years, that's well past 2050. And so I feel that we have to sort of bring that to a halt and just repair things that break instead of putting in new ones. But I'll go into more detail with whatever I send to the committee. And thanks for giving me a chance to speak.
Thank you so much, Tom. I'm going to go over to Lindsay Spear with the Alliance for a Green Economy. Go right ahead.
Oops. Hi, sorry, I can't get my video going, I just realized. So my name is Lindsay Spear. I'm with Alliance for Green Economy and on the Heat Smart CNY program. And I want to just note that I greatly support many of the recommendations being made by the panel, especially the focus on workforce development and adequate funding for low to moderate income households. I want to support Mrs. Rogat's observations on the need for streamlining low to moderate income applications. I support the focus on having clear dates for energy transitions to help send the signals to the market and building professionals. One of our heat pump homeowners recently shared the experience of building her house with me. She knew from the beginning that she wanted to install a geothermal system, and her location was perfect, a rural area with a lot of land for a horizontal loop system. Her general contractor, electricians, and plumber all tried to talk her out of the geothermal system, largely because they were unfamiliar with it. She persisted and went from paying $400 to $500 a month for her heat in her old home to $45 a month in her new home. We need to provide ongoing and accessible training in heat pump and insulation installation and building design for energy efficiency focused on providing services for the entire building industry, not just HVAC contractors, but general contractors, plumbers, home performance contractors, architects, and engineers. These centers need to be located in cities with adequate public transportation to get to them to allow for workforce development in low to moderate income households, as well as more rural locations throughout the state. This needs to be paid training to make it worth the time with the contractors and more convenient and located. The focus on environmental and economic justice is also incredibly important. NYSERDA's heat pump pilot program currently available is a good start and is starting to get the scale of funding required. Everybody wants safer, more efficient, and comfortable homes. The legacy of redlining continues to impact communities. The low housing prices in these areas make it difficult to leverage the capital needed for renovations, resulting in significant deferred maintenance. Many of these homes still have knob and tube wiring and asbestos-wrapped gravity furnaces, and both of these are usually deal breakers for participating in energy efficiency programs, leaving these households behind. Energy efficiency upgrades need to be interwoven with the healthy home systems as well. Let's look at this as an opportunity for reparations. For
Lindsay, I'm so sorry. I'm going to have to cut you off. Apologies. Please complete the rest of your comments in your submitted comments. Apologies for that. I'm just going to move us along to Fan Yu Lin.
Hi. I think the section about energy benchmarking, disclosure, and performance standard for buildings will be very important. I hope to see more development on that. Sorry about the barking. On that content, and maybe a subcategory devoted to housing and affordable housing, because the standard will be a little bit different, I assume. And this information can transform into a ESG reporting for investors, especially impact investors who is looking at this sector. So I think there will be some very innovative business model and new financing vehicle come out of this reporting and benchmarking, and also collecting the data to aggregate the benefit of what you are doing will be very important. Thank you.
Thank you for that. And we will go on to Brian Cregan with Hub Controls USA. Go ahead, Brian.
Hi. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Brian Cregan. I work with Hub Controls. We've developed an automatic energy management system that's wrapped up in a smart thermostat, and we've been commercialized in the Irish market since 2019. We're now entering the New York market. I'm very excited to be doing so. What I've noticed in the market is there's a lot of pay for performance initiatives starting to emerge nationally in the US as a market-based approach to delivering and paying for energy efficiency solutions. These pay-for-performance models shift the focus away from individual measures, saving estimates, to whole building metered savings. This is in contrast to single upfront flat payments used in traditional energy efficiency rebate programs. I mean, rebate programs have been there for years. If they really worked, we probably would be on this call because we would be all energy efficient. So I would like to see a push in legislation towards pay for performance models as a way forward to delivering energy efficiency. So that's my comment. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Brian, for being so prompt. We're going to move along to Lisa Harrison, who is my last speaker on my block. Go right ahead, Lisa.
Hi. Let me turn my video. Is it on? It's not allowing me to. Okay. Hi. When New York State banned fracking in 2015, I hoped this would usher in a transition to renewable energy. But since the fracking ban, fracked gas pipelines have been snaking their way from Pennsylvania into every corner of New York State, emitting greenhouse gases and contaminating our air and water along the way. We've now built miles of fracked gas pipelines and power plants, but not one single large-scale renewable energy project. We need much bigger and better development of renewable energy, or we will never be able to do the electrification which we need to do. So the first thing I would say is stop making the problem worse. Reject every new fossil fuel project, because this is still going on. Then as we ramp up renewables, we can start shutting down currently operating power plants and other infrastructure. Stop all fossil fuel subsidies and invest in large-scale energy efficiency programs and local development of wind and solar power. This should include manufacturing, assembly, and installation. Replace oil and gas heating systems with air source heat pumps. I am also concerned about the refrigerant issues, and that really has to be addressed. And also training. We have to require a comprehensive training program for installers, because a good installation is critical for heat pumps to run efficiently and avoid refrigerant leaks. And we really don't have enough trained, knowledgeable installers right now. And the retrofit, of course, must be made affordable. I would say beware of false solutions like importing Canadian hydro. There are many good reasons not to do this, which I'll include in the comments.
Lisa, I am so sorry to have to cut you off. I apologize. It's going to move us along as the 2 minutes are up, but I invite you to submit the rest of your comments in writing.
I will. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. John, I believe you have some reflections for this group of speakers.
Thank you. In this last group, we heard the need for improvements to code enforcement and also to think about the risks of burdening property owners with more onerous code requirements that could also be solved through further incentives. We heard requests for the panel to consider the role of biodiesel in this clean energy economy and regional planning as an effort for the energy future. In that, we can reimagine the roles that agencies play, especially in local governments and in the disciplines of energy and housing, to shift them to thinking around not just about penalties, but also to provide resources to communities. We heard repeated support for date certain and prioritization of equity, protection of affordability, and pilots within affordable housing. To provide clear pathways to jobs and affordable financing and incentives. We also heard the inclusion of health considerations in any benefit cost analysis that we pursue. We also heard the emphasis on refrigerants and the future of low global warming potential refrigerants as standards to be set to ensure that we only use low GWP refrigerants. We heard calls for incentives for emergency replacements to favor electrification. We also heard to not forget the role of oil in the fossil fuel phase out conversation. We also heard emphasis on the potential for energy benchmarking, some ideas around looking at pay-for-performance models for policy execution, and that we need to seriously expand renewable power resources and end investments in fossil fuel infrastructure and those continued subsidies that support that industry. And back to you.
Thank you so much, John. We are recognizes that we're almost at time. So we are going to go get through our last block and then wrap up and answer some of the questions that are coming up in the chat around slides and so on. So our last block is Lisa Marshall from Mothers Out Front, Jerry Wiley, no official affiliation given, Kayla Scarpa from New York Public Interest Research Group, and then John Siavacco from Aztec Geothermal. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to you, Lisa. You're up next. Thank you.
Thanks so much. And just want to say I appreciate how well facilitated this session was. It's the best facilitated session I've ever been to at a New York State public meeting. So congrats. Thanks for the opportunity to speak. I represent Mothers Out Front. We are working on ending gas and moving to building electrification in New York and California and Massachusetts and Virginia and in other states as well, but those are the main ones. I also am the program director for Heat Smart Tompkins, and I work every day in promoting energy efficiency in buildings as well as heat pump adoption. And I just want to start my remarks by reminding us of the realities of the housing crisis in New York. We have basically the worst housing crisis in the country in so many ways. Our housing is so inadequate. Thousands of people today in this cold week, this had no heat or hot water in NYCHA housing. And here upstate where I work, I've been getting hundreds of phone calls from people in response to our outreach about the heat pump demonstration pilot that's happening now. They don't know anything about heat pumps, but they know that they are cold. Their houses are very inadequate. You would probably be shocked that I talk every day to people who are heating their houses with coal and here in New York State, as well as wood and pretty much people with no heat that are plugging in space heaters and huddling around them. So we have an affordability crisis. We have terrible old, out of in terrible condition housing stock that isn't even in good enough shape to do energy efficiency measures in. And if we're going to really marry the climate crisis effectively with housing, we really need to address people's basic housing needs as we move towards this exciting path of beneficial electrification. So I strongly support, a sunset timeline for gas in buildings and conversion to heat pumps.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Sorry about that. To cut you off, apologize. I am going to now turn it over to Jerry Wiley.
I want to thank you so much for this opportunity. You may not have received my notice that I decided to submit written comments instead of the speaking opportunity. So you're welcome to move on. Thank you.
Thank you, Jerry. Appreciate you giving your time to others, and we look forward to looking at your comments. The next person we have up is Taylor Scarpa.
Hello, my name is Taylor Scarpa, and I'm currently a student at Syracuse University, as well as a legislative associate with NYBERG. I just wanted to talk about a few important points, the first being the importance of all electric new construction. In order to meet New York's climate goals, new construction must utilize electricity instead of fossil fuels for heating and other purposes, not gas. This is critical to stop the build-out of new gas pipelines and to ease the transition to renewable energy. There are a number of cities that have already taken this step, including Oakland, Richmond, and San Jose. San Jose is the largest city in the nation to do so, and they have just expanded their law to include more buildings for 2022. Buildings must also become more energy efficient. A good model is NYC's Local Law 97. Local Law 97 places carbon caps on most buildings larger than 25,000 square feet and mandates certain energy efficiency measures. Similar policies should be explored for smaller buildings across New York State. And phasing out fossil fuel boilers can help with this process as well. This can be done in three ways, which include banning the replacement of boilers with fossil fuels when the boiler is due to be replaced, requiring replacement of fossil fuel boilers during the time of sale or transfer of property, or by a specific deadline, whichever comes first. These actions are really important to me as a young adult because they directly impact my future and the future of our environment. If there's not a sustainable real change now, the possibility for a planet for my generation or generations to come is very dismal. And going off of that, I would really like to see SUNY and CUNY students involved in these conversations. Thank you so much for the opportunity to speak.
Thank you so much, Taylor. The next person on this block is John Siavaco.
Hi there. So I'm John Siavaco. I'm president of Aztec Geothermal. I'm also a board member of NIGEO. I'm on the DPS Strategic Advisory, and I've been involved in lots of utility rate cases. I'm a mechanical engineer by training. My company does the design and installation of air source and ground source heat pumps primarily. And I'm very active, and there's lots of comments that people have made that I just want to respond to, which would be really fun, but I'll see if I get to that. I agree with many others who have said that the Climate Action Council recommendations really need to include dates certain for certain events to occur. That way people can plan, the whole chain can plan. Short of that, right now when we're trying to sell electrification to people, we're competing against fossil fuel solutions that don't pencil out very well. But if heat pumps were the only way to go, then we'd finally get the volumes that we need to get the prices where we need them. I would also say that in terms of workforce development, I think that we should leverage equipment manufacturers and suppliers, building envelope material suppliers, to provide training and maybe give them an upstream incentive if they provide significant amounts of training. They're usually pretty good about, they want their products to work in the field, and they're a good source of real know-how how to do this. We have to be mindful of the commercial aspects of that, but there's a resource that I think we don't talk about enough. Low-cost financing. I'm really compelled by the loan loss reserve program that NYSERDA put out for a certain sector, where they basically protect lenders, bankers, they give them downside protection. And I think that could help more lenders provide folks with lower credit scores if we can protect those lenders and also get lower interest rates, again, if there's less risk. I think a 20-year product for any type of initiative that has longer than a 20-year effective useful life. 15-year products are kind of the limit, but 20-year does make things more affordable as long as the interest rates aren't too bad. I think it's important that we look at non-energy benefits and we monetize more of those. That's going to likely be through the benefit cost analysis process that I think needs to be reevaluated in light of the CLCPA. I'd also like to see more bundling of incentives where envelope, HVAC, and domestic hot water are all sort of bundled in some straightforward incentive package for building owners to electrify.
Thank you, John. Just ran out of time. Apologize. And with that, thank you everyone for your patience as we went through this process. I'm now going to turn it over to the state team for some concluding remarks and housekeeping. Thank you all.
Thank you very much. Can you hear me, Nisha?
Yes, wonderful. You're on.
So thank you all so much for participating. I also just want to thank the members of the Energy Efficiency and Housing Panel for participating today. While the New York State Agency team, together with our truly expert facilitation team from Hester Street, were the faces who are out front today, we have our panelists and their diverse range of expertise here with us today as well. Our panel requested to
be in listening mode today because we all valued hearing your input and wanted to, again, place the time and attention there. So again, written comments are encouraged through February 18th and may be submitted to the panel via the email, eehpanel@nicerta.ny.gov. We will be posting the slides from today on the Climate Action Council website as soon as possible, and they will be posted at the same address that's shown here on the slide, which actually I'll chat. Well, if somebody from the New York State team could help chat that address while I speak, that would be fantastic, so that people can have direct access to that advisory panel meetings and materials link, where you'll see the slides posted under our Energy Efficiency and Housing Advisory Panel. We'll also be producing a thematic summary of comments and responses to clarifying questions for all comments that are received by February 18th. Thank you for all of your contributions today as the panel is working to make recommendations that will help inform the Climate Action Council as it works to develop a scoping plan. And then before I turn it over to our panel chair to close, I just wanted to offer one more reminder that public engagement efforts will be ongoing as the Climate Action Council continues its work. So thank you all, and Commissioner Vasnauskas.
Hi, thank you, Vanessa. I just wanted a couple quick points before we wrap up today. Thank you, everyone, for participating. We really genuinely want and need and value all this input, so we are appreciative of all the time. I know it takes a lot of time to get in a queue and wait for your turn, so thank you for that. I also would thank you for the compliment that was in the chat that we are organized. We work incredibly, incredibly hard on this. This team spends hours and hours and hours a day on this topic and getting ready for things like this. So I would just thank you for acknowledging all of that work. They are great. And I wanted to make just three quick comments on three common themes I heard today. So one was about workforce and about unions. And I wanted to assure everybody that if you don't see it here, don't think that we aren't both talking about that within our panel, but also more broadly, the Climate Justice Working Group is very focused on that. I spent 3 hours yesterday on their public meeting, and I think it was yesterday, this week. And so there is a lot of energy and effort. There's a lot of engagement with unions. There's a lot of workforce discussion going on. So please know that even if we didn't talk about that here, that really is going on. As you probably know, there is a Just Transition Working Group. There is a Power Generation Working Group. There's a Transportation Working Group. So there's a lot of themes that are cross-cutting, and some of them are more deeply addressed on those other panels. The second point I wanted to make, we heard over and over today that dates are critical, go faster. We get that and we hear you. And while we didn't have dates in here today, the panel has been very, very focused on dates for implementation and understands the urgency. So again, don't take the absence of the dates on here as meaning that we don't understand the importance and that we haven't thought about it. We're deep in that as well. And my last point, and hopefully it goes without saying, but is, you know, we appreciate all the comments about low-income communities and low-income households, certainly as the HCR commissioner, but also on this panel. We are very, very focused on that also. So we appreciate those comments, and I just sort of wanted to reinforce that we are also spending a lot of our time talking about those issues too. So those are sort of three. There are so many good points today. I wish I could address them all, but I just wanted to make sure that you all know that we not only hear that, but that we are very have spent a lot of time thinking about those, especially those three things, and there will be much more to come on this. So 4:59, you can all have 60 seconds back. Thank you so much, everybody. Vanessa, we are done, right? All right, thank you, everyone. Till next time.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Ruthann.